Lindsay, you had the opportunity this past week to appear before the Labor HHS Appropriations Subcommittee in the U.S. House of Representatives to talk about the money that U.S. taxpayers, all of us, pay when it comes to K-12 education. It seems like there's been not a lot of return on investment, if you will, for the money. Want to tell us a bit about what you told the members of Congress?
I told Congress, to paraphrase Ronald Reagan, we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem when it comes to K-12 and higher education, but particularly with federal spending on K-12 education. We have seen, if you look throughout the 20th century, inflation-adjusted per-pupil spending increased on average 3.5% per year every single year. And so if you add all of that up, it's more than tripled in real terms, federal spending since 1965. And so we have just seen a tremendous amount of money poured in to K-12 education, particularly from the federal level. And to your point, just have not seen commensurate increases or improvements in educational outcomes, either educational achievement outcomes or attainment outcomes like graduation rates for American children.
How bad is it when it comes to those outcomes here, Lindsay? I understand that we're not only at a pre-COVID low, but actually a low going back a lot further.
Well, that's right. It's bad. The COVID outcomes, we knew were going to be very poor, but we didn't expect exactly how bad they would be. And so if you look just over the past few years, we saw for fourth graders and eighth graders, reading outcomes fell an average of 2 points. Since 2022, declining from what were already historic lows in 2022. Reading scores in particular fell in 48 out of 50 states for children. They are down 8 points just since 2015. And that might not sound like a lot to your listeners, but to put it in perspective, 8 points on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, put it in perspective, 10 points is the equivalent of an entire year's worth of learning. So we're talking about these kids being behind nearly a year relative to where they were a decade ago. And unfortunately, the story is even worse for disadvantaged children, for low-income children. They declined even further. And, you know, we can point to COVID and we can point to recent lackluster outcomes, but this has been an ongoing problem for decades. If you go all the way back to 1965, when Lyndon Johnson launched the War on Poverty, there was the equivalent of about 4 grade levels difference between low-income children and more affluent children. It's sometimes referred to as the 90-10 gap. Today, it is exactly the same. There is 4 grade levels difference between low-income kids and upper-income kids. And so the whole point of the War on Poverty, and then 20 years later when Carter launched the Department of Education to try to narrow these gaps, the federal government has failed on every objective measure.
It's interesting, Lindsay, that a lot of times, particularly for the low-income students, they're in school districts that are subpar relative to more affluent school districts. One of the ways to get around that would be to give students and parents school choice options. Is there anything that can be done at the federal level to encourage, and in some cases, if necessary, force states and school districts to provide school choice options, education freedom to students and parents?
Yeah, there certainly is. And you're right to sort of couch it in those terms, right? The federal government is a really small stakeholder in overall spending. Even though they spend a lot, federal taxpayers spend a lot, it's still only about 10% of everything that's spent on K-12 education. States and localities pay for 90%+ of everything that we spend in K-12 schools. And so for the most part, really robust school choice efforts have to happen and should happen too for just good governance purposes at the state and local level. But there are things that Congress can do, particularly for kids who are clearly under Congress's jurisdiction. I'm thinking populations like active duty military families, where there is a national security imperative for the federal government to make sure these children have access to schools of choice that work for them, are safe and effective, and are aligned with their values. And so providing military families with school choice rather than assigning their kids to whatever public school happens to be nearby, the duty station that their parents assigned to, would be a really good first step. Native American children come to mind as well. The federal government operates the worst schools in America, and these are Bureau of Indian Affairs schools that are leaving these kids many, many grade levels behind their Native American peers in public schools. So giving them school choice opportunities, children in Washington, D.C. D.C. is a federal city, despite what some folks in D.C. might not want to hear. It is under the jurisdiction of Congress. And so creating a universal school choice in D.C. would be another option. There are other people talking about a federal tax credit at the federal level. There are options to do things like condition a state's municipal bond exclusion on having a school choice program. So there are a lot of creative ways that the federal government expanding 529 savings accounts for homeschooling families can advance school choice in a way that's appropriate.
Which brings us back to the Department of Education. As you mentioned, only 10% of the money spent on education comes from the federal government. But when you look at the Department of Education, how much of that 10% is being eaten up in bureaucracy? And do we really need that agency to be anything other than just a pass-through to the states and school districts?
You're so right. That's what it is. It's a pass-through. It is where federal taxpayers, you and me and every family in America, are forced to send their hard-earned dollars to Washington to filter it through the Department of Education, which is a 4,300-employee bureaucracy, and then send that money back to local schools and somehow think that that's the formula for improving educational outcomes. If we were going to start a system, education system from scratch tomorrow, I guarantee you that's not how we would design it. And to your question, we know, based on a report called Education at a Crossroads that was commissioned several decades ago now, in fact, that only 65 cents on every, quote, federal dollar makes it back to the classroom. So we know a lot is getting taken off the top. And I would add, too, former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos made this point really nicely the other day when she said, you have to remember the U.S. Department of Education does not run a single school in America. It does not pay a single teacher salary. It does not educate a single child in America. It's a large bureaucracy designed to funnel money back to states and localities in an incredibly efficient and ineffective manner.
We have been talking with Lindsay Burke, who is director of the Center for Education Policy at the Heritage Foundation. And Lindsay, tell us a bit about Heritage Foundation. And you've written extensively on this topic. Where can folks find those writings?
We're a broad-based public policy foundation engaged in all kinds of issues, domestic and international, of importance to the American people. But education is our bread and butter. And at the Center for Education Policy, we work day and night to advance education freedom, meaning school choice for families and limiting federal intervention in education. And you can learn more about our work at heritage.org. And I'm on X or Twitter at Lindsay M. Burke.
Lindsay Burke from the Heritage Foundation. Lindsay, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.